It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadari.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. Hello, I'm Rob Hamadari. I'm your host. I'm the author of Better Than You Think. And today I have a special guest with me, Heidi Marie Farron. She's out of Los Angeles, California. She has quite a resume. She's right now, she's in film, television. She's a writer, a storyteller. She's a product of foster care and rape. And she's going to share her story today, how she's come from a place of being alone to never being alone. So Heidi Marie, thank you for being here with us tonight. And how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Great. I got this big smile on your face looking at you. Beautiful. She's, by the way, I didn't mention this, and I skipped this already, Miss USO, meaning Miss United Services Organization. So let's start out by telling us about that. Why don't we tell
them? So I'm the last one. There aren't any more now. They broke the mold, I guess. last and longest reigning. And it's like Miss America for the troops, but it's more performance and service oriented. So that means I was blessed and to go to everything from the ball drop in Times Square, New Year's Eve before Lady Gaga, to Walter Reed, and being with service members and their families the day after they were pulled off of the field. So it was absolutely changed my life. One of my greatest honors.
And there's a story that leads up to that, correct? Yeah.
Many.
Yeah, right. So let's take you back, because we were going to title this Never Alone. And you were alone for a while. And you want to go into a little bit what happened as early as a child?
Yeah. So I am the product of a rape. So my mom is a fierce warrior. She was totally disabled when it happened. And against all recommendations and odds, she kept me. And what ensued then was a lot of court, and I was put into foster care, and I was in more than one foster home, and it's not an easy environment regardless, but then the second one was very abusive as well, and I can say firsthand that there's not a lot of that is the most alone that you could feel, to be a four-year-old child not knowing when you're going to come home again, or if you can go home, or what's going to happen tomorrow, or why, you know, you have no one. And, but I always, even then had this, like, it's like God is all you have. And I had that foundation even as a child, and in kind of, in a very personal way, because I that was all I had. And then fast forward to being so honored to be a part of the USO, but then you're in this environment where you're singing and dancing and chatting, and you see real live heroes at every turn. And I remember it was my very first Fleet Week. And I was performing for the USO at that time. I hadn't run for Miss USO yet. And I remember they were taking us out to the aircraft carrier, and there was bad weather. So instead of heloing us out, we were being, you know, shuttled to where the Coast Guard would meet us, and then they would ferry us out. And everyone was at the front of this big van and chatting and laughing. And I saw this huge Marine sitting at the back, and I thought. And I didn't know he was a Marine yet. I just saw this very, very tough guy sitting in the back of the van. And I was like, I'm gonna go sit over there with him. So I went over, and one of the things that I think that, you know, trauma can, much like a Marvel superhero, you know, your biggest scars can be your greatest superpowers. So I have always been really empathic, and it was something I found that was a big blessing in my work with the USO, because I was able to really pay attention to the feelings of the people around me and look for where I could be of service in that moment to that person. And, you know, because you go to bedside in Walter Reed the day after these life-altering things have happened to people. And the last thing I need to know in that moment that that person in that hospital bed is shining a smile back at me, and I am going to give one 10 times bigger back because I know that's what they need right then. And I can't dissolve into a pile of tears. I need to be that light for them, so they know that there is light and there's going to be light. So back to this shuttle, I was sitting back there in my waiting to see when it was okay to speak, just kind of sitting. And this man says, USO, huh? And I said, uh-huh. he said, oh, I know the USO. He's like, I did three tours, Vietnam. And he said, USO came. And then he just opened up this beautiful story about how he was in the jungle and hadn't seen his family and was really in a very, very dark place thinking about, you know, I don't know if I can go on. I don't know if I can keep doing this. I haven't, you know, I don't know what there is to even go home to. It was just very, very, very depressed. And he said, Bob Hope and Raquel Welch came and they did this show. He said, the show was great. He said, but the thing that meant the most to me was that Raquel Welch came after the show and hung out with us in our tents for hours and just like drank with them and had fun with them and chatted and whatever. And he said that it gave him the hope that allowed him to push through and come home. He said, just that it just reminded me what home was like. And I just knew that I wanted to be that for people just like him forever and ever, because I mean, that it matters, you know, it matters. it's great things about being in our country.
I mean, I can hear it. I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in your heart, you know, how much this matters to you. And I think there's some parallels here. You said the guy, you know, he was in the jungle. He was alone. He was depressed. Now, I don't know if you went through that, but I'm like, okay. And he just wanted to get back home. And you, as a 4-year-old, knowing you're a foster child, you could consider that a being in a jungle, not knowing when you're going to go home and going through those up and down moments. And I'm thinking, you know, this was planned for you. I think God had a plan for you here. Would you agree with that?
100%. It's so funny because, you know, like when you look back at life and you see the pieces of your life getting kind of woven together, there is no doubt in my mind that God has a hand in all of it, and that all things work together for good for them that love the Lord and they're called according to his purposes. That's a verse that I love. And that doesn't mean just the good stuff. That's all the things, even the things that hurt the most, they're working together for something great. And I know that all of those experiences, you know, I was homeless for a bit with my mom, and all of those things have allowed me to be there for another person and walk with them and encourage them in a way I wouldn't have been able to if I hadn't also gone through, you know, the valley of the shadow of doubt, lots of valleys, but and then now, one of the things I got to come to that was a huge blessing, because I was kind of trying to distill, you know, when you're a hyphenate and you do all these things, and then I sat back and it hit me like a ton of bricks. When I was 4, how I got to come home to my mother, was I had to testify against my biological father, who assaulted and abused me as well. And so at 4 years old, they stacked phone books, like 5 phone books, so I could see over the witness stand.
Sheesh.
And they didn't have really kid-friendly environments at that point. But they sat me on the witness stand, and my mom, I used to beg and plead for her to read me Snow White every night. It was the golden book, Snow White. And then there was a recording repeatedly, until one night she said, I'm sorry, Heidi, I'm so tired, I can't. She turned out the lights and she said, you know, just you read it to me. And I was like 3 at this point. And So I started reciting the entire story from beginning to end, complete with words I had no idea, you know, chasm, and a three-year-old does not know what that word means, but no. I do now. But I recited that story. And then while I was on the witness stand, the judge said, you know, I understand, you know, the story of Snow White. And for me, I loved that. So, they were trying to say that a little girl can't remember all of these terrible things that her father had done to her. And it was through the telling of that story, through the telling of Snow White, that they were able to say, well, not only does she remember, she's specific and precise. She remembers everything. And your client is everything that she said. So storytelling was how I got to come home in the first place. And it's been doing it ever since.
Yeah, that's amazing. And thank you for sharing that. So, because some people could say, hey, how could a four-year-old remember this? How could a three-year-old remember that? Right. And you just basically told us how. So like at 4 years old, though, it sounds like you had empathy going already. You had knowledge. Were you the only foster child in the family, or were there other siblings there, or just you?
Oh, there were a lot of kids. So
in the same family?
In both homes. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, they had two twin girls, and then there were three or four different people that kind of rotated through the house. And when, in fact, in my very first foster home, I remember peering over the staircase when there was a young man there, and I watched the conversation where the foster mother said he thought he was going home. And she had to tell him that he can't go home, but they'd like to adopt him. And I think he was 13. And I had never seen a boy cry at that point. And, and he was just crumbled. And it was the first moment I realized, oh, I could not go home.
Wow.
I could really not go home. And I was absolutely, I mean, the other house, they starved me. I had a distended stomach and skin and bones by the time I got home. I don't remember why I got on that topic, but
there were a lot of other kids.
And the second home, they had about four other kids in addition to me. So there was always, and they were not nice to me. There was one person that was nice to me. She actually saved me from drowning because I fell in a pool.
Gosh. Because I was sitting here thinking, you know, like, how does a four-year-old know that they're alone? Like, some people would say they don't know anything. They're not going to remember this. And you experienced it and you're sharing it with us right now. So, I mean, it's proof that that happens. It's proof that you can have those feelings and that awareness at that age. So, so it was, I think you said at 8 years, something happened at 8 years old, you told me. So from 4 to 8, you're bouncing around a couple foster homes, right?
No, I was there for about a year. It was about a year of foster care. But I'm not sure there.
Something, Billy Graham, you met Billy Graham or something. Oh, you got exposed to Billy Graham.
That's how I got saved.
That's it. Okay.
I was watching a Billy Graham revival, and mom had just left me to my druthers. And at that point, you know, I didn't know what it was to be saved. I mean, I had it was very tangible to me. Like, I always felt God with me. There was this fierce fire of determination in me that I was going home. But I know God had his hand on my life it was my best friend, without even being able to speak it probably. And then I saw Billy Graham, and I listened to his sermon. I was 8 years old, and I thought, oh, I want to get saved. You can get saved. I'm going to get saved. And I prayed the sinner's prayer, and I ran through the house saying, I'm saved. I'm saved.
That's great.
And I it's just been, you know, my mom was so, so wonderful. You know, she grew up in a strict Assemblies of God household, and she really wanted to not, and that's wonderful. That is wonderful. That is a blessing. Like, it gave her, my mom, she was a gospel singer. She's a woman of God through and through. But one thing she did for me that I appreciate so much to this day is that we went to churches together, and we looked for a home. We didn't look for a denomination. We looked for a place that when we walked in, we felt the love of Christ and community, and a place where we could pour in, and that would be welcome. And you know, it's not always easy to find a church home. And she taught me how to look for that and how to look for God, you know, the house of God. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that's always been very special to me. And I think it's very important in a spiritual journey to look for a place where you're fed and where you can be, where you can plug in as well. Cause that you get as much from giving as you do from receiving. I think more.
Funny you say that. Yeah. I might've mentioned this on this podcast before, where, and it was a book Wayne Dyer had written that I'd read. And he said, the giver in an act of kindness often receives the same, if not more, from giving than receiving.
That's absolutely, absolutely true. And it look at service members, look at the stories of, you know, mothers that a child is caught under a car. And this, when you have something greater than yourself that you are called to, you can move, you can do more, you can be more, because your purpose is outside of yourself. So all of those things that we deal with where, you know, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not tall enough, whatever it is, all of that stuff comes from sitting right here and saying, oh, I am all there is. No, yeah. All there is everyone else. And that's like the point. That's why storytelling matters. And that's why, you know, speaking matters, because you physically vibrate the air you share with other people, and it creates a scientific reaction. God is so good. God's in the science.
And I can feel that energy coming from you. You had a rough childhood there. You get out of foster care, you're with your mom again. And then did you find a home to live in? You and your mom, you found a home?
We found a home. We had to kind of go into hiding. From him. And so we, you know, kind of moved way out in the boonies, and then everyone kept dying in my family. And then we ended up in Arkansas, and which is where my whole family's from.
Okay.
We didn't have a lot of, especially then, we didn't have, my mom's family was not supportive. And I think that's something that, you know, another really powerful moment for me was volunteering with the Rape Crisis Center. And I think something that my family was really very religious, and I am too, but different ideas and priorities at the time. So they considered her ruined. So they tried to, ministers were telling her to get an abortion, and mom refused. And the doctor thought it would kill her because she, you know, totally disabled. And she said she just felt called to have me. And, but my, then also they just, there was a lot of, there's a lot of, you know, jealousy and strange things in my family. And they thought, you know, you're already ruined, why don't you marry him? And that's part of the reason why he was still in my life as a child.
Wow.
She didn't marry him, thank God. But because of that, they would invite him to family things, and he would constantly be coming around. We were terrified. I used to help my mother push a dresser in front of our bedroom door every night till I was taken to foster care.
Oh my gosh.
And it just, it's so at stake, you know, having that very tangible knowledge that, you know, you can be hurt. You're not always safe, but we're going to fight against that. And So we had a lot of family conflict on top of even after that. And honestly, I feel like sometimes that's the biggest hurt. The people that you think are going to, you know, they're the ones that are like your team, right?
Yeah, and those closest to you hurt you the most sometimes.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
So Hattie Marie, you have this awakening at 8 years old, right? Now you're saved. And so, you know, between like from the time you're eight to like now, you've done some pretty cool things, you know, whether it's the acting, the singing, the writing, the storytelling. Yeah. What was there But was there a switch that went off or an aha moment that says, I'm going to go do this? Because I think I feel like you grew into helping people, like never be alone. I feel like you grew into that. Yeah. But did you know that at age eight, or did you feel it kind of evolve?
You know, so I, and part of the reason we had to go deeper, because I was a child actor. So I did commercials and Romper Room and the whole thing. And then he found us, and it was a whole mess. So when we moved to Arkansas, there was, that stuff was not the same opportunities. So we had to make our own. And then my mom started a nonprofit to help young people, and her students were everything from like 5 to 80. And so because my mom started it, I was her right-hand gal, and we would perform at nursing homes and veterans hospitals and any festivals and wherever we could. And we just for free, and students would earn credits towards lessons by performing. So they were getting to perform and learn. And it was me, but it was always this thing I did with my mom, who's working nonstop. And, so then when I was looking at colleges, and I have to say, I was convinced I was going to college. We had no money to send me to college. There was no question in my mind. I am going to college. Uh-huh. And I remember I started volunteering for this, it was a rape crisis center. And, which already that's synergy. But we had to do this, it was a role-playing exercise. So we would draw out different scenarios and we wouldn't know what the other was. And then we would act it out. And it was a room full of, people training to do the calls and to be advocates and, as well as survivors. So my scenario was that I had been sexually assaulted, and I was telling my boyfriend, and my boyfriend blamed me that it was my fault and didn't believe me. And afterward, I you know, there were really powerful scenes, and I thought, oh, so silly to sit there and like be like, did I do okay? Was it okay? Did I do okay? And a woman, actually, she was one of the leaders of this event, came up to me afterward, just covered in tears, and said, you know, that happened to me. She said, I was assaulted, and I told my boyfriend, and I never told anyone, even to this day. And this is what I do. And this is the first time I'm ever telling anyone that this happened to me. And it was the first time I felt seen, being able to see that in front of me. And I just, I always knew that I loved telling stories, but it was the first time I really got how important they were to other people. And so that's when I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So then I went to school, I went to SMU, and I got a full scholarship and like local scholarships that just made it possible. And, God totally made a way. And then, you know, I always loved writing, and it wasn't really the thing they encouraged me on, but just whatever format I could tell a story that could change a life. That's where I feel the most lit up inside. You know, is in making an impact in people's lives. And Jesus spoke in parables. And I think there's a reason. We need a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I've really been fortunate to be able to see both on stage, off stage, on the page, how much story changes lives, because it allows us to look at ourselves without it being physically us.
Yeah. That's really cool. So you have a strong relationship with your mom now. She's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's been very sick for a long time, but yeah, she's my ride or die.
Well, I was just going to ask you, is she your hero?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And do you ever, it's probably not a good question to ask, but do you ever see yourself as a hero to these people you get to see and help?
Sorry.
Yeah,
I see them as my hero, you know?
I'm sorry.
I see them as my hero.
Wow, that's powerful. And we're telling, and I see you on screen here. A lot of people are going to hear this, and they won't. Not everybody will see it because it comes out as audio first. Where's this emotion coming from? Can you share that right now? I can feel it and I can see it.
Yeah, I just
and it's beautiful, by the way.
I think every single time I'm able to pour a piece of myself, my heart, no matter if it came from pain, more so when it comes from those places, there is a physical reaction to being able to help another person that, you know, to be the giver is always more, to me, more powerful than even, I'm not a great receiver, first off.
Most givers are not.
I've worked on it really hard to do that because I know how much it means to me. I know, and that's why I like it's the little things. Like, so we were homeless for a bit. We lost everything. We were living in the car, and this is a tangent. I'm good at those, but my
this is raw. Keep going.
Raw and unfiltered. We were at a Presbyterian church in Arkansas, and we were coming back from living in a car for a year, and it was really rough. And the church, rather than, you know, have any thoughts about, you know, you're always afraid no matter what, that you're going to be judged about everything. And we came back to a house we thought had sold that had, you know, animals living in it. And they didn't do that. They rallied around us in the most powerful, beautiful expression of what the hands and feet of Christ that I've, you know, really gotten to see firsthand. And this is silly, but I had always wanted a black turtleneck. Just simple. Like, I'd always just thought, oh, I'd really love a black turtleneck. And there was this they were in their 80s, the Teeters, at church, and she'd always get these things. She'd call them her roadside bouquets, and she would pick these beautiful wildflowers and put them on display in church every Sunday. And one day it was like Santa, and I hear the sound of a bag hit the front porch. And I went outside, and I see little Pat running back to their pickup truck, and she had left me she left us a bunch of clothes, and inside the bag was a black turtleneck. And it was like one of those things nobody could have known, but it was me. God was saying, you know, I got you. I know the smallest things you don't even tell anybody. And I know that's an episode of receiving, but that to me is, when you're able to pour into the lives into the life of another person, it is your best self. It is everything that's beautiful about being human. And to me, it's the purpose. It is our purpose is to be there for other people in small ways, whether it's telling them that you like their hair, like just making that random compliment to let somebody know that they're seen and they're loved, even if it's a stranger. Because I know that's what God is for me. I feel
seen. You see him wiping some tears out of my eyes. So keep going.
No,
it's, right. Thank you for sharing it. Cause you made me think, you know, like the reason I said, I don't know if this is the right question to ask, cause I didn't want it to come from a place of arrogance, like I'm your hero, right? Or I'm their hero. And the way you respond, it was profound because you said, I see them as my hero or my heroes. And it made me think, and this is coming from a place of humility. Like my son and I, and my daughter too now, like we go to football games and baseball games over the years, and you see these homeless people sitting on a curb panhandling. Everybody thinks, oh, they're panhandling, they're paying in the rear end, let's get them out of here, right? And years ago, I remember like with my kid, when they were kids, when they were really young, and now like they're 20 and 23, my two, and I have an old daughter too at 38, but my two younger kids, we would go to these games. And I would say, here, give them a buck. Hey, give them a buck. But when you give them a buck, ask them their name. get a name. Because when you get a name, they're going to feel important. They're going to feel like somebody. And so in that moment, you could sit there and say, hey, I gave them a buck. I was their hero. But they are your hero in a sense that they helped you be able to give more because they inspire you to do that. So when you said that they're your heroes, it's the switch went on in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, when we give, we don't put ourselves up here, put ourselves down here as humbly and receive that grace of letting somebody else be our hero through inspiring us.
Yeah.
Through the tenacity and the strength and the resilience they had to get through what they're going through. Cause you had to do that. You did that. You got through that. And now you're reciprocating that to, or let's say you're passing it on forward. Right. Yeah. And you are a hero to other people, but to be able to say they're your hero too, that's just, I think it's beautiful. I do. I think, thank you so much for enlightening me and others. You're going to hear that because it's awesome. It was awesome to hear. And then it got emotional because I could hear it and feel it in you, but I could feel it in myself too. And that was just, it was amazing. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Any piece of me that is worth something or good, like that's what it is when I get to, and the fact that someone would let me be that we're all in it together. I don't think, but I'm thank you for sharing that about your kiddos, and it's
powerful. Yeah, it is. So thank you. I mean, I feel like we should just drop the mic, right? Because you've helped, you are continuing to help. You helped a lot of people, and you're going to continue to help a lot, in your career going forward here. And I just appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing this. And I just hope everybody gets the message that they're never alone. And I think if we see people in a place where we think or assume they're alone, say hello, get a name, give them a hug, shake a hand, or give a word of encouragement, because we are. And we do feel alone at times. Like you said, you were alone, but really you're never alone because there's somebody always there for you. And we know who I'm talking about right now, because God's always there.
Yeah.
You know, and then when somebody else could be there in a physical sense for you, you could really, really help somebody. So I'm like speechless right now. So I really appreciate it. So I'll ask you this real quick. So obviously, you've done a lot. You've helped a lot of people. You got a beautiful smile, beautiful person, beautiful heart. So thank you for doing all that. So how much more chiseling do you got going on in your life here?
Oh my goodness. Oh man. You know, one thing that is important to me, is to always be working, to always be learning something new or signing. I don't like to be idle. So, if there is, I love the opportunity to serve. I became a CASA for lots and lots of reasons, but one of those reasons, was the opportunity to serve young people like me and, Sam Pipers and every way I can give, so still doing to whatever way I can serve, whether, I've an advocate against human trafficking, and which 80% of individuals who are trafficked in this country come from the foster care system. So that is a cause I'm very passionate about. I also in the defense of ICWA, which is coming up before. Now I'm giving you all the causes that I want to support.
That's great.
Just jumping in and trying to be of service wherever I can, and working on writing projects that also reflect that, and then even projects that I am not writing on, but want to help get into the world. You know, I'm a producer too, and that's because there's a lot of, overlooked stories and communities in the world. And I just think that you can change a mind with an argument, but you change a heart with a story. And that's what I want to help do.
Say that one more time for me.
You can change a mind with an argument, but you change a heart with a story.
Wow. So, I mean, Jesus said the greatest among us must serve, right? And you're doing that. And that's the greatness that you have inside of you. But thank you for sharing. I mean, it's just, this is beautiful. I'm so glad I got the opportunity to meet you. I got referred to you through Diana here, and she was on this podcast. So
hers. Love you, Diana.
And it's just amazing what we do God's work with who he puts in front of us and what he puts in front of us, right? And I wouldn't have met you if it wasn't for that. And now you've shared this, and so many people are going to hear this, and you're going to inspire and impact so many people. So Heidi Marie, I got one last question for you. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, are you open to somebody reaching out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all over the socials, at Heidi_Marie Farron, and then Heidi-Marie Farron on Facebook. Maybe there might be a Miss USO in there, and then LinkedIn, all of the things. I have a website. Just look me up, drop me a line. If you need prayer, send it my way.
There you go. I love that. And just to make sure everybody understands, Heidi Marie Farron, Ferren, correct?
Yes. Yes.
You got it.
Ferren.
She's out there. She's inspirational. She's helping and impacting people. And I'm sure all servicemen out there in the world, servicemen and women out there in the world, appreciate what you're doing. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for what you do. God bless you.
I appreciate that. Until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.